This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Zoom Video Conferencing.
I'm Wendy Gillette. The Saudis' new take is eliciting skepticism from many corners. The country now says journalist Jamal Khashoggi was killed in a fist fight inside the Saudi consulate in Istanbul. CBS News correspondent Holly Williams is in Istanbul.
The Saudi explanation was a good first step, proclaimed President Trump, and once again argued against canceling lucrative U.S. military contracts with Saudi Arabia.
What I would prefer that we don't use as retribution canceling $110 billion worth of work, which means 600,000 jobs.
Turkish officials speaking anonymously have told journalists they believe Khashoggi was tortured, murdered and dismembered inside the consulate by a 15-man Saudi team that left Turkey soon afterwards.
Khashoggi's body has still not been found. The voting went on as scheduled in Afghanistan. Despite several attacks, including a suicide bomber who blew himself up at a polling station, killing at least 15 people, terrorism expert Sajin Gohel.
The authorities were bracing themselves for this. They were trying to take various security measures to deter the extremists and terrorists from carrying out these attacks. But unfortunately, it's not possible to be able to stop every single incident. And tragically, we've seen an attack with a very deadly effect.
Thousands of immigrants remain on a bridge between Guatemala and Mexico. CBS News correspondent Jim Taylor reports.
They are cold, wet, and hungry.
We're talking about at least 2,000 people sitting or standing on a bridge with no water, no food, and it's constantly raining.
Madeline Penman, Amnesty International. The caravan of mostly Honduran migrants hoping to seek asylum in the United States pushed back by Mexican police with pepper spray.
We would call on Mexico and the Mexican government to exercise extreme caution in carrying out any deportation of Honduran people.
And via Skype, she says Mexico has a history of just that. Jim Taylor, CBS News.
President Trump says the immigrants must be stopped if they are able to enter Mexico and travel north. A mega jackpot could be yours. No one won the Mega Millions top prize last night, which means you have another chance Tuesday. The jackpot is now at $1.6 billion and is expected to rise, making it a record breaker. Gordon Medencia is the director of the Maryland Lottery.
We are in uncharted territory. You know, our financial people do these estimates every day based on actual sales. And as we saw during the last week, I think we were going up every day.
One lucky soul did win $2 million in yesterday's drawing. It wasn't me. This is CBS News.
Zoom video conferencing, featuring video and audio clarity with screen sharing. Free accounts are available at Zoom.us. That's Zoom.us. Zoom video conferencing.
Admit it. You probably want to eat healthy. But getting enough organic fruits and vegetables into your diet every day is not only time-consuming, it's expensive. That's why at Texas Superfood, we've created a blend of the best USDA organic, vine-ripened fruits and vegetables, powerful enzymes and probiotics, and energizing herbs, all in a convenient capsule or powder. We call it Texas Superfood Complete Organic. Hi, I'm naturopathic Dr. Dennis Black, and I invented Texas Superfood almost 20 years ago with one goal in mind. To help people like you who lead busy lives get the all-natural nutrition that every one of us needs and deserves. So if you can't, won't, or don't eat all your organic fruits and vegetables every day, Texas Superfood Complete Organic makes eating healthy easy. See our full line of quality nutritional products at TexasSuperfood.com or call us at 855-TEXAS-55. That's 855-TEXAS-55. TexasSuperfood.com.
Hurricane Michael could impact a holiday meal tradition. CBS News correspondent Jim Crisula reports.
Those holiday pecan pies could cost more and be harder to find this year. Hurricane Michael caused what's being called widespread and catastrophic damage to Georgia's prized pecan groves. Grower Art Sessions was looking forward to a fabulous pecan harvest.
It was the biggest crop on our farm I think we've ever had. It couldn't hit at a worse time.
Hurricane Michael may have caused $1 billion in agriculture damage in Georgia alone. Jim Crisula, CBS News.
The buzz inside Narcissa Restaurant at the Standard East Village in New York this week wasn't just about the food, it was about the ACLU. Nine dinners at Standard hotels in New York, L.A., and Miami are raising money for the organization's Immigrants' Rights Project. Organizers say some diners don't realize how many immigrants make up the staff at restaurants. There are six dinners remaining. Wendy Gillette, CBS News.
KGMI News Update.
The Northwest Indian College is ready to study marine science in the Salish Sea. The college announced they were awarded a $3.5 million grant from the National Science Foundation to support community-driven marine research. An Island County mental health counselor has had his credential to practice suspended for at least 10 years. The Washington State Department of Health says the suspension of Lewis C. Cox's credentials this month was due to charges laid against him earlier this year. The Webby News Times reported in May the 49-year-old allegedly uploaded child porn to the Flickr website earlier in the year. Artist Point is still open, but time is running out to catch the great views at the end of Mount Baker Highway. The Department of Transportation says the road will stay open as long as it's safe, and they'll close the gate at the Bagley Lakes trailhead as soon as snow and or ice make driving dangerous. Your KGMI dependable forecast. Through Monday, we've got sun and highs in the low 60s. I'm Clay Wilson with KGMI News.
This is Wealth Wake Up on KGMI with Dick Donahue. The opinions voiced in Wealth Wake Up with Dick Donahue are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult with your attorney, accountant, financial, or tax advisor prior to investing. Securities offered through Cetera Advisor Networks, member FINRA, SIPC. Investment advice offered through CWM LLC, a registered investment advisor. Cetera Advisor Networks is under separate ownership from any other named entity. Guests of Wealth Wake Up with Dick Donahue are not affiliated with Cetera Advisor Networks, CWM LLC, or Asset Advisors LLC.
Good Saturday morning, Dick Donahue and Camille Kolfenberg with you. Camille's in studio. I'm in Spokane. Getting ready to go to a Cougar game at College Game Day today.
Game
was in
day.
Pullman. Somebody asked me, my daughter at Chicago says, are you there? I'm trying to find your sign. I said, well, I'm crazy, but not as crazy as I used to be. Not to get down there at 4 o'clock in the morning and then be there till 7, 8, 9 o'clock tonight with a football game. Eddie working for this old boy. Anyway, let's talk about this week's recap here a little bit. We saw geopolitical events continue to thump strong earnings as new developments related to Saudi Arabia and the Federal Reserve commentary weighed on the market. For the week, the Dow Jones Industrial Average and S&P 500 Index eked out modest gains, 0.41% and 0.02% respectively. Technology and small cap stocks fell fractionally as the NASDAQ dropped 0.64% and the Russell 2000 Index dropped 0.3%. The disappearance and presumed murder of the journalist Jamal Khashoggi has become a significant political and economic issue. Saudi Arabia has acknowledged that he died during a fight in the Saudi consulate in Istanbul. The U.S. and its allies have not yet determined their responses. They will likely balance criticism of Saudi Arabia while maintaining relationships with the kingdom as an offset to Iran's role in the region. Actions by the business community are perhaps sending a more important message. Many high-profile companies have withdrawn from attending and/or speaking engagements at next week's Davos in the Desert Financial Summit. The summit is intended to showcase Saudi Arabia to attract new business investments to diversify their economy. Furthermore, Saudi Arabia has invested significantly in technology startups. Retaliatory actions could dampen investments in venture capital deals. And perhaps coincidentally, several companies, including Uber, Lyft, and data mining, Planetary Technologies this week announced plans for IPOs in 2019. 2 years ago, Uber received $3.5 billion in funding from the Public Investment Fund, Saudi Arabia's sovereign wealth fund. Wednesday's release of the minutes of the most recent Fed meeting revealed mixed opinions on future interest rate increases needed to maintain a neutral position. The markets continue to struggle in evaluating the rate increases' impact on higher interest rates. The Fed, though, seems steadfast in setting a course of gradual, data-driven rate increases. The big picture here suggests that the recent spike in interest rates may reflect investor concerns about the strong equity market rally. That is, the overvaluation of recent performance leaders may have unnerved investors. For example, even though Netflix recently rose after reporting higher than expected a new subscriber growth, ended the week in a bear market territory more than 23% below its all-time high. It was set in July. Companies including Adobe, Goldman Sachs, Johnson & Johnson, and Procter & Gamble reported strong earnings this week. Notably, Procter & Gamble reported that high demand rather than price increases drove its strongest quarterly sales growth in 5 years. Of the S&P 500 companies, which have so far reported earnings, approximately 90% have exceeded analysts' estimates. Company commentaries reveal limited impact on tariffs to date, while concerns remain in the impasse continues. The U.S. and China apparently plan to meet in November. European and other Asian countries are providing support for the U.S. position regarding unfair bidding practices for infrastructure projects. As with the past political crisis, the current crisis, too, will likely resolve over time. Likewise, the sell-off of this month trigger market activity. Why? Because earnings conference calls reinforce expectations that continued economic growth in 2019, and companies, after reporting earnings, will be free to re-enter the market for stock buybacks. Current prices may provide an important support for the market as earnings season progresses and political events unfold. Okay, Camille, we lost an icon in the Northwest. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about his art collection.
We are. So, yes, Paul Allen passed away, and it was a shocker to a lot of people. He had made his announcement, and then about 2 weeks later, he passed. And it goes to show how kind of awful cancer can be. Even one of the most richest people in the world couldn't get by. But, you know, I do want to talk about his art collection. One interesting fact about Paul Allen is his art collection that might be worth about $1 billion. So 2 months before his first public exhibition, and it's called the Paul Allen's Art Collection, the curator, Paul Tucker, he found himself inside that billionaire's box at the Super Bowl in 2006, rooting for his team. He talked about this. You know, the Seahawks lost, but he talks about how the after party was a riot. So Paul Allen jammed on his guitar, and actor Dan Aykroyd, if you don't remember who he is, he accompanied him on the harmonica, and they partied until 2 or 3 in the morning. And to Paul Tucker, it was his gift before that art show opened. So his curator, Paul Tucker, was an art scholar who played college football. And he doesn't know what's going to really happen to that vast collection. It actually spans centuries from antiquities to contemporary art. And like I said, it's going to be probably worth more than $1 billion, at least to the people who are familiar with it. So as we all know, Allen, who co-founded Microsoft with Bill Gates and was the world's 27th richest person at the time of his death, he was driven by his passion and curiosity. And so he wanted to be challenged, as Tucker says. So a little bit about this exhibition. The exhibition is has a Renoir portrait of a woman reading a book with a large Roy Lichtenstein, and I might butcher some of these artists' names, so I apologize. So he's got a Roy Lichtenstein painting that depicts a pilot embracing a blonde bombshell. He's also got a Claude Monet painting of a cathedral in Rouen, which was matched with Jasper John's aluminum numbers. These are big, important paintings here, you guys. He also has, and for Paul Allen, he collected for enjoyment. And how he amassed these through the years is crazy. He was a lover of Monet. So an interesting note here, Allen was the anonymous buyer of the French painter's 1891 canvas of the haystack. If you guys don't know that photo, look it up. He purchased it for $81.4 million. Very interesting here. I am up at the time here. I'd like to talk a little more about this, but after the break, Dick is actually going to talk about how Paul Allen's $26 billion estate could take many, many years to unravel. We're going to go ahead and take a break here. Thanks for listening. Dick Donahue, Camille Kopenberg.
Hi, I'm Steve, co-host of In the Shop, Saturdays from 9 to 10 on KGMI 790. I own Panacea Automotive Repair. Did you know that the definition of Panacea is a remedy for all ills or difficulties, a cure-all? At Panacea, honesty is our priority. We won't sell you products you don't need or do repairs that aren't necessary. We understand the necessity of a good working relationship, so we take pride in giving our clients quality service. Panacea Auto Repair, service you can trust, on Britton Road behind Iron Man Movers or at PanaceaAuto.com.
Hi, this is Whatcom County Sheriff Bill Elfo.
And I'm Bellingham School Board Member Jen Mason. We're here together to urge you to vote for Eric Ritchie for prosecutor.
I'm supporting Eric Ritchie for Whatcom County prosecutor. As a prosecutor, Eric Ritchie has put criminals in jail, including those charged with murder, rape, stalking, and felony assault. His opponent hasn't prosecuted a single felony case in the state of Washington, not one.
Eric Ritchie is my choice, too. Eric Ritchie strongly believes that we need to keep low-level drug offenders out of jail to better protect our community and to reduce costs to taxpayers. Eric Ritchie has served Whatcom County for 25 years by advocating for victims of crimes.
Eric Ritchie has the support of the Bellingham Police Guild, Linden Police Officers Association, the Whatcom County Union Firefighters, and me, Sheriff Bill Elfo.
We hope you'll join us in voting for Eric Ritchie for prosecutor.
I'm Eric Ritchie, and I ask for your vote. Paid for by people to elect Eric Ritchie, Democrat.
I'm Secretary of State Kim Wyman. Elections can impact your wallet, affect your rights, even change the course of a country. On November 6th, you have the opportunity to make your voice heard by voting in Washington's general election. Visit myvote.wa.gov for candidate statements, drop box locations, and other important voting information. Your vote is your voice, so mail in your ballot or take it to a drop box before 8 p.m. on November 6th.
Brought to you by the Office of Secretary of State, the Washington State Association of Broadcasters, and this station.
The opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of KGMI News Talk 790 or the Cascade Radio Group.
If tomorrow all the things were gone, I'd work for all my life, and I had to start again with just my children and my wife.
Welcome back to Wealth Wake Up Live. Dick Donahue, Camille Kopenberg with you. Camille's in studio. I'm out here in Spokane today, heading to Pullman for the Oregon Coug game coming up at 4:30, but we're doing a little radio show right now. Mm-hmm. She gave you a little talk, a little background on some of the art collections that Paul Allen had amassed over those years. I'm going to talk a little bit about his $26 billion estate. I should let you know we are asset advisors located out on the Pacific Highway in Ferndale, 5060 Pacific Highway, Suite 101. That's Ferndale, 98248. Our phone number is 360-733-1200. Check out our website, assetadvisorsllc.net or wealthwakeup.com. Anyway, back to Paul Allen's $26 billion estate. It's going to take years to unravel. Paul Allen basically operated out of what we call a family office. And, of course, it will live long and it'll prosper. The vast holdings at Vulcan, Inc., with real estate, his art, his sports teams, the Seahawks, of course, Portland Trail Blazers. He had venture capital in many different companies. It's going to take years to unravel, and that's even if that's even what he wanted it to happen. Allen, of course, who died Monday, had no spouse or children to divide his empire. There are many others with interest at stake, including family, staff, charities, as well as potential investors eager to snap up pieces of his accumulation. And even though this is a person's life and their personal holdings, it's almost like the dissolution of a major corporation. Even if things go as long as you might expect, it could easily be 3 to 5 years. The Microsoft Corporation co-founder spent more than 3 decades outside of the software company. He amassed a variety of businesses and philanthropic endeavors. At least half of his $26 billion is probably earmarked for charitable purposes after he joined the Giving Pledge almost a decade ago, and an estate tax bill will apply on much of what remains. But important questions loom about which of his assets are likely to be liquidated. The 32-year-old call company, Vulcan, that oversees Allen's money, has the umbrella for a variety of investments, his activism, his philanthropic units. They include the Vulcan real estate, a commercial portfolio that Bloomberg estimates is worth over $1.5 billion. The Vulcan Capital, which tends investments in public and private companies. He also amassed one of the world's largest art collections, which Camille just talked about. And he held ownership in two sports teams, probably worth $3.5 or $5 billion. Pretty good investment there. His philanthropic interests were split among other units. The Paul G. Allen Family Foundation, started by Paul and his sister Jody, which oversaw assets valued at $766 million at the end of 2016, according to their latest filing available. The private organization is distinct from Allen's Institute, which is a public charity that focused on medical research, with Jody and several of the Vulcan employees serving as directors. If you look at other large estates, it might be a guide. The legal transfer of his holdings will probably take years. Federal estate taxes for deceased taxpayers must be filed within 9 months, although many filers ask for an additional six-month extension. A large and complex estate like Allen's, even when well-prepared for a succession, is likely to face an Internal Revenue Service audit, if only because of its size and complexity. During that time, administrative staffers are often required to deal with the agency's questions. So it's going to be a long process of cleaning up what he did. And I'm sure that, you know, as like Camille said earlier, you know, everybody was in shock because, you know, we knew that he'd had a treatment back in 2009 for the cancer and it was in remission when he announced a couple of weeks ago it had returned. Why, I guess you just kind of think, gee whiz, he'll find the best treatment in the world and he'll be okay. So that was a shocker.
That was a shocker.
Anyway, Camille, go for it.
All right. Well, we're going to switch gears here. Let's talk a little bit about missed required minimum distributions. So when you turn 70 and a half and you have a retirement account, they want you to start taking money out of that account. You know, Uncle Sam wants his tax. So I've got a little Q&A here from some listeners. The first comes from somebody who has not taken a required minimum distribution from an inherited IRA, which is something they inherited for 9 years. And so they're wanting to know, well, what do I do? First of all, I'm not sure if you missed all those mailings about having to take those RMDs out, but you should pay attention to your mail. So that's the first thing there. The second thing you want to do is determine whether or not you had an IRA that was inherited from the decedent or through the estate. So you want to figure that out first. If it was through the decedent, that's the person who passed, then you need to determine if the inherited IRA defaulted to what is called life expectancy payout. So if they did, then those missed required minimum distributions can be made up. And then once you've made that up, you can continue to take those required distributions going forward. If it defaulted to what is called the 5-year payout, then you got to take all the money out. So it's got to be emptied. Okay, so that's called the inherited IRA from the decedent. If the individual inherited through an estate, then the payout period will depend on the default payout period in the document and then the age of the actual decedent and the year of death. So when the decedent dies before his, it's called the required beginning date, that's April 1st of the year reaching 70 and a half, then they have to use what's called the 5-year payout rule. It's the only option. If the decedent died after the RBD, that required beginning date, and the IRA agreement allows, then this is the more favorable option. The payout period is based on the decedent's life expectancy. It's more typically more than that 5-year payout period. So when a beneficiary, that's the person who receives the money, misses an RMD from the inherited IRA, There's a 50% penalty. It's a big penalty, you guys. And it's going to apply to the amount of the shortfall. And you're going to use a form called 5498 for the year of the missed RMD. You probably want to talk to a tax accountant, a CPA, if you do this. Okay. While the penalty is hefty, the good news is that the IRS will waive it for good cause. And so to get that waiver, the missed RMD has to be taken. You have to write a letter of explanation, and you file it with a form called 5329. So many numbers there. So like I said, you want to talk to your CPA. It's pretty important. And you don't have to pay that prepay penalty if you do get a waiver, that 50% penalty. So that's kind of a high-level overview of a beneficiary's options when you forget to take a required minimum distribution from an inherited IRA. The second question that I received goes as this. Hello, I have a question regarding an incorrect assumption that someone could lump his IRA and 401k required minimum distribution together and take the full total RMD from the IRA. So again, this person's got an IRA, they've got a 401k, and they want to take their RMD together from the IRA. So now that he has done that, and it has been more than 60 days, he's been told that he still must take the RMD from his 401k. And he doesn't want to take this RMD because he feels that he already took it from the IRA. Is there any way around it, or is this the only way to put an excess amount that was taken from the IRA back into the IRA, since he should have taken it from his 401k instead? Rolling the 401k into an IRA at this point wouldn't be helpful because his 2018 RMD is based on the 401k's balance at 12/31/17. Is that correct? I need your advice. Okay, a little confusing there. But there's not a really easy remedy for the situation. So an IRS, the IRS is allowed to grant an extension of that 60-day rollover period for good cause. There is a self-certification process that some individuals can use as long as the reason for their missed rollover is one of the 11 reasons the IRS gives. So if that person doesn't qualify for one of those reasons, then you can use what's called a private letter ruling. It's usually something that has happened in court for an extension of time based on the fact that, you know, that person received bad advice. The thing with that is there's no guarantee that the IRS is going to approve the request. The IRS fee for this type of PLR, that's private letter ruling, is $10,000. There would be a preparer's fee, and it takes 6 to 9 months on average to receive a ruling. So it's kind of a tough situation there, and it's unfortunate that that person received bad advice. So since the tax code doesn't allow for an IRA and employer plan RMBs to be aggregated, so that's kind of the answer to the question there, is that you cannot aggregate your 401k RMD and your IRA RMD. It has to be separate. You need to kind of really navigate that. Maybe if you're unsure about some things, ask your financial advisor. All right, we are up at the half here. Thank you for listening to Wealth Wake Up with Dick Donahue and Camille Kopenberg. It's time for news and sports.
Slowdowns you should avoid, and if you're in a jam, how to get out of it. And if you see problems on the road, give us a call, 676-5464, so we can spread the word. KGMI, News Talk 790 and 96.5 FM in Bellingham. KGMI Sports.
Washington and Colorado are going to need help along the way if they're interested in a replay of the Pac-12 championship game of 2 years ago. One of them will be struck with a second loss in league play after the 15th-ranked Huskies host the Buffaloes today. Each of them is looking to rebound from a loss. Washington lost in overtime to Oregon last week. Colorado was knocked from the ranks of the unbeaten after getting thumped at Southern California. And the Washington Huskies play today on KPUG. It's a 10:30 pregame show, a 12:30 kickoff on our sister station, KPUG 1170 AM. 25 Washington State hosting number 12 Oregon has more significance than many may have expected early in the season. The game will be key in determining which program stays alive in the hunt for the
CBS News update. Saudi Arabia has changed its story about what happened to journalist Jamal Khashoggi. Many are expressing skepticism that Khashoggi died in a fistfight inside the Saudi consulate in Istanbul. Khashoggi's fiance has endured more than 2 weeks of not knowing the fate of the man she loves. CBS's Holly Williams is in Istanbul.
On the day that he disappeared, she says that she came to the Saudi consulate with him and then waited outside for him in the expectation that he would get this paperwork that he apparently needed to get from the Saudi Arabian government so that they could get married. However, he never emerged. She waited outside for hours, and after waiting for a certain period, she was the one who sounded the alarm, contacting the Turkish authorities.
Politico's Daniel Lippman.
We've long had this bargain, this almost devil's bargain with Saudi Arabia, that they would do what they want and we would get oil and a stable country.
CBS News Update, I'm Wendy Gillette.
Duard & Bodie's 72nd anniversary sale is going on right now. And this week, they're featuring limited-time anniversary sale specials you will not find anywhere else. Get to Duard & Bodie's Bellingham showroom across from Bellis Fair Mall and upgrade your mattress to a queen-size Sealy Conform mattress for 50% off this weekend only. That's right, they're cutting the price of this mattress in half, just for you, just for this weekend. This queen-size Sealy Conform mattress was $1,200, but you can take it home today, half off, for just $599. Rest assured, this comfortable, supportive mattress comes with a 10-year manufacturer warranty. Plus, Duard & Bodie will deliver it locally right to your home for free. See store for details. Restrictions apply. Find mattress deals like this and more all weekend long, like deep markdowns on closeout Tempur-Pedic mattresses. Upgrade today with no money down and no interest for 4 years on qualifying orders. OAC, see store for details. Get these offers before the person in line behind you does. Right now, during Duard & Bodie's 72nd anniversary sale.
The following is from a speech by Senator Doug Erickson.
The homelessness crisis has reached epidemic proportions in Bellingham and is impacting all of us in Whatcom County. Our streets are no longer safe. Our social service agencies are overwhelmed. Our jails are overcrowded. We must act with compassion towards our brothers and sisters, but we must act. But the policies of my opponent and the city of Bellingham are taking us in the wrong direction. Bellingham has become a magnet for the criminal homeless, diverting funds from homeless families, veterans, and others truly in need. And housing is now unaffordable because of my opponent's support for new taxes, new fees, and new regulations that drive up prices. Fixing homelessness is complicated, and there is no single answer. But a good start is to do the opposite of what my opponent and the cities of Seattle and Bellingham are currently doing. Let's put our people and let's put public safety first.
Paid for by the committee to elect Doug Erickson, GOP.
Tune in this Saturday at noon to KGMI for Aging Options. Life planning coach Rajiv Nagayach and elder law attorney Phil George will show you how traditional planning can be a recipe for financial disaster. To find out how to avoid the pitfalls in life planning and to enjoy a happy and successful retirement, join us each Saturday at noon for Aging Options on KGMI News Talk 790, 96.5 FM, and online at KGMI.com.
And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the men who died, who gave that right to me, and I gladly stand up.
Welcome back to Wealth Wake Up Live. Dick Donahue, Camille Kopenberg with you. And this is a little programming note. Chris Haldeman in her Saturday Morning Live program has been interviewing a number of the candidates for a number of the positions on this year's election ballot, one that she has not been able to schedule because of timing conflicts with her full schedule is Tom Seguin, who's a candidate for the State of Washington Appeals Court position. He'll be joining us at about 11:45 today when we come back our break after this segment. So just a little ahead, heads up that that's going to be happening. Also this week, the IRS came out with rules that it's maybe a fairly narrow opportunity, but for people that it applies to, it's huge. There's capital gains tax breaks in what we call the so-called opportunity zones. And I think there's three set zones that were set up in Whatcom County. The regulations came out Friday. They're looking at what they figure could be at least $100 billion in investment opportunities for real estate and businesses in these distressed areas. The rules provide investors with guidelines on how they could qualify for the tax breaks of these opportunity zones, which are basically underdeveloped areas that the U.S. government is trying to promote investment. They specify that only capital gains could qualify for the benefit, and they provide details on what types of entities can invest in the opportunity zone funds, along with which projects qualify, a Treasury official said during the call with reporters. And the rules are likely to spur even more activity from investors and funds who are awaiting guidance and hoping to close deals before the end of the year. The Treasury Department will issue another set of regulations later this year addressing questions about the ongoing operations of a fund, including whether a fund can buy and sell assets over its lifetime. President Donald Trump's tax law, investors can take proceeds that would be subject to capital gains tax, such as those from the sale of a business or a stock, put them into the opportunity zone funds to defer and potentially reduce their capital gains taxes. They can also avoid taxes on the fund's gains completely. And so this is for something for the people who were one of the few hundreds of employees, for example, in some of your tech companies. They don't want a boatload of money to be all tied up in company stock. There's some interesting things we'll see happening. It's also popular among people already investing in real estate as a way to boost returns on low-income housing and commercial real estate projects by investing in riskier neighborhoods. There's roughly 8,700 opportunity zones throughout the U.S., like I said, three in Whatcom County, spanning the Rust Belt towns, low-income areas of major cities, and rural swaths out here in the West. The funds have already been established. Some have been have been established and raising money even before the Friday's rules came out. And because of the uncertainty about what regulators would say, the projects that they've identified generally include real estate, where the land is a very small fraction of the cost. The IRS rules specifically specify the funds don't have to be include the value of the land when calculating how much the law requires them to spend renovating and refurbishing a property, according to the Treasury official. For example, if a fund were to pay $1 million for a warehouse and land with the building valued at $400,000, the fund has to spend at least what the building is valued, not the total purchase price in renovations. There's a boon for investors in urban areas where land can be a significant portion of the project's cost. Developers can spend less to meet the rules for what constitutes substantially improving a building under the law. For some projects, such as affordable housing, investors could have been forced to pay more to improve the building than they would have been able to recoup in rental income. So basically, the rules are that if you have 180 days from the sale of your stock or business to put the proceeds in an opportunity fund to qualify for the tax breaks, the capital gains on those proceeds are deferred. So if you had capital gains from the sale of stock or a business, you can defer it by putting those capital gains taxes until 2026. They could be reduced by as much as 15%. You can avoid capital gains taxes altogether on any appreciation that the fund has on those investments for at least 10 years. The IRS also says that the funds have 30 months from when they get investors' money to do the renovations. So despite the potential for billions of dollars to flow to communities that haven't seen much in investment, some researchers and nonprofits have criticized the tax law's opportunity zone provision because it could allow savvy real estate developers to exploit the break for projects that may have done any that they could have done anyway. The targeted development could also displace lower-income residents. So anyway, the opportunity zones and the fact that you can put money into in the investments that qualify and defer taxes is a big one. So, Camille, what do you have there?
All right. Well, I want to talk about a little bit about what we're doing. We've had a lot of discussion in the last couple of weeks with market volatility and a little bit of concern. And so I want to talk about a strategy that Dick and myself use with our clients, the defined risk strategy. And it's been around for, I think we're in our 21st year. Is that right, Dick? I think
it's been 21 years in July.
So we've got a little piece here, but think to yourself, what were you doing 20 years ago? Let me give you some context there, all right? And some of you guys might not be able to relate to this, but in the spring 20 years ago, Wannabe, actually this is 21 years ago, Wannabe by the Spice Girls was the number one song in America, all right? Later, it was followed by a song called Mbop by Hanson. Men in Black dominated the summer box office, and it was dwarfed by a movie called Titanic. Okay, Tim Duncan had been drafted by the San Antonio Spurs, and the Houston Oilers departed to Tennessee. And people were starting to worry about the dreaded Y2K bug. Okay, so these are cultural milestones in music, movies, and sports. But where were the capital markets? Let's talk a little bit about what happened in July 1997. The Dow Jones crossed 8,000 and the S&P 500 cracked 900. Those were both first. We had Apple computers then, and they were a joke. Amazon.com was an online bookstore, and Google, Facebook, and YouTube, they didn't exist. Alan Greenspan warned about irrational exuberance creeping into the market in 1996. But the dot-com bubble was still a year or two in the future. On July 1st, 1997, three-month yields were 5.3%, and 30-year Treasury bond yields were 6.74%. Interesting. Well, in July 1997 was also when a man called Randy Swan, he launched the defined risk strategy. This is what we use with our clients. And his vision remains, we want to offer a unique approach to investing as an alternative to a 60-40 portfolio. And how has it fared through the last 21 years? Well, there have been a lot of things that happened, two major market correction, a whole list of crises, challenges, and a ton of calamities. But what they have done is they have not changed their strategy. And that is something to think to yourself while we're kind of navigating through these markets right now. If you have questions about this, we'd love to talk to you. Please give us a call, 360-733-1200. And coming up here after the break, we have Tom Seguin. We are going to chat with him, change of gears here, and see what's going on with the election. Thank you for listening. We're going to go ahead and take a break.
Don't put up with this.
Call Bellingham and Burlington Automotive.
Hi, I'm John.
And I'm Dan.
We co-host In the Shop Saturdays from 9 to 10 on KGMI 790.
And we run Bellingham and Burlington Automotive.
The ASE certified techs at Bellingham and Burlington Automotive can take care of this.
So you can get back to this.
Schedule an appointment online today at bellinghamautomotive.com or burlingtonautomotive.com.
Delivering exceptional automotive service for over 25 years.
I'm Ken Mann, former Whatcom Council member. After twice saying no to paying higher taxes for a bigger jail, we need a real change in leadership in our prosecutor's office. James Erb is an experienced prosecutor who will keep our community safe while making overdue reforms to produce better outcomes for less money. Please vote James Erb.
I'm James Erb, and I'd be honored to have your vote on November 6th.
Paid for by Vote James Erb, Democrat, Bellingham, Washington.
For crawl space and attic cleanup, call Clean Crawls.
Clean Crawls will clean up that dirty crawl space, remove and replace your insulation, change out your vapor barrier, wrap pipes and ducts, and make sure rodents and other pests are removed.
Plus, with new energy-efficient insulation, your home will stay cooler in summer and warmer in winter. You'll save money on your energy bills, too.
Clean Crawls, the largest and most experienced in Washington, and winner of the Angie's List Super Service Award 11 years running.
Clean Crawls will make sure you get your maximum energy rebate.
Tuesday, too.
Call right now for a free no-obligation quote. Mention code RADIO for their fall special. That's 360-347-2188, code RADIO.
Or cleancrawls.com.
Serving all of Island, San Juan, Skagit, and Whatcom counties.
Special limited time offer. Call today, 360-347-2188.
Call Clean Crawls today for a free no-obligation quote. Mention code RADIO and receive special pricing. 360-347-2188.
Cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA.
Welcome back to World Wake Up Live. Dick Donahue, Camille Pukenberg with you here on KGMI. And I think we have Tom Seguin on the phone with us. Tom, did they get all the buttons figured out there to get you on?
Well, as far as I know, I'm on.
Gotcha. I can hear you. That's
loud
good.
And clear.
Okay, good. Hey, let's first of all, Tom, let's talk a little bit about you're running for a position called the Appeals Court, which may not be familiar to a lot of people. So let's talk about what is the Appeals Court.
I'd be glad to. The Appeals Court is the intermediate appeals court in the state of Washington. Most folks are familiar with the Supreme Court, and they hear, for example, this last week there was a case that came out of the Supreme Court that ruled that life imprisonment for juveniles is unconstitutional. Before you can get to the Supreme Court, if you have a case coming out of, for example, Whatcom County Superior Court, you have to go to the Court of Appeals. And the one that I am running for is called Division One, and the position that I'm running for is District Three, which includes the four Northwest counties. So any case that is appealed, basically from Whatcom County, because that's where most of your listeners are from, will make its way first to the Court of Appeals. And then if the folks involved in the case don't like the result they get there, they can try to get the case to the Washington Supreme Court. The seat or the office of the court is in Seattle, so whoever is in that position has to migrate back and forth from the district to Seattle, and that's probably part of the reason why folks aren't too familiar with it.
So, Tom, let's start. I know you're busy. The ballots, of course, most people should be getting their ballots the next day or so if they haven't gotten them. You've been out there busy doing a lot of political forums and what have you, but what makes you a candidate that's qualified for this position?
Well, it's just based upon my background. I like to tell folks that I can hit the ground running because I've been working as an attorney for 30 years. I like to tell folks that the caseload down at the Court of Appeals is split about 50-50 between criminal and civil cases. And I, over the last 30 years, have had a pretty varied legal career. I have served for 20 years as a prosecutor, including 4 years as the Skagit County elected prosecutor. When I was down there, I oversaw a lot of criminal cases, of course, and I also managed the civil division. Following that, I have been in private practice since 2007 or so, so about 10 or 11 years, and I've continued to practice criminal law for that time period, continued to practice civil law, a lot of complex civil litigation, and I've continued to do appellate work. My appellate skills and training, I guess, if you will, go back to my days in law school when I was on the Law Review and had some published articles, those sorts of things, and I worked for an appellate lawyer down there. And I've been doing appeals in Washington State really since 1990. And I just feel like I'm very trained, very prepared to do the job. And I'm asking people, as I put in the voters' pamphlet, to compare the candidates. And if they do that, they're going to find that there is a discrepancy or a difference between myself and the other candidate in a lot of these areas, which I think makes me better qualified to be the candidate of choice. The other thing I would say here is that I live in Bow, and I've lived there for 20 years, but over the last 30 years, I've actually worked pretty extensively in all of the four counties represented by this position, and I know lots of folks in the legal community, and I know a lot about the community. I worked for Whatcom County for 5 years as the Assistant Chief Criminal Deputy under David Keffern, and he, along with some other Whatcom County officials are endorsing me. Bill Elfo, the sheriff, some folks might know former Superior Court Judge Mick Moynihan, former Superior Court Judge Steve Mura, and all the current judges in district court are endorsing me, as well as former district court judge Ed Ross, who lives out in Ferndale. So those are some of the reasons.
So let's specifically talk about what, again, qualifies you for the appeals court. You say you've had experience for, what, like 20 years?
Well, I've been a lawyer in Washington since 1987, so I guess you can count things different ways, but I put that at 31 years. And, you know, as I said...
Well, let's talk about your experience, though, with appeals court.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you.
Let's try talking about your experience with the appeals court.
Oh, sure. You know, one of the first cases I handled was back in 1990. It was a case, a drug case. I was working as a prosecutor at that time, and working with Mike Rickard, who was the Superior Court judge down here, who was also endorsed me. But it was a drug conspiracy kind of appeal. Following that, I had another case that I took out of district court in Skagit County, and I'm just trying to think of some of the other cases in the Court of Appeals. What folks don't necessarily realize about the Court of Appeals is there's a lot of writing, a lot of research, and a lot of analysis. And I have been, again, doing that for about 20 or 30 years, and I think that those skills are things that are important to have if someone's going to be, I'd like to use the term, hit the ground running. I've been to the Washington Supreme Court. I should mention that. When I was in Whatcom County working, there was a case where a person who was convicted of a crime decided that they didn't have to pay the fine that the judge ordered that person to pay. And I handled a case that went all the way up to the Washington Supreme Court, where the court determined, I know it sounds crazy, but the court determined that they have to pay their fines. So that's an example, I guess.
Well, so when you say that this is a regional thing, so there are appeals court judges from what? How many regions in the state?
So there are three divisions in the Washington State Court of Appeals. We are
okay.
In Division 1. Division 2 is Tacoma, south to Vancouver, on the west side of the mountain. So it would be the southwest county. And then mm-hmm. Division 3 is on the east side of the mountain. And,
how many judges are there actually on each appeals court then?
Well, I'm not exactly sure about the other two, but I can tell you in Division 1, there are 10 judges. And
okay.
Seven of those judges are elected out of King County exclusively. Two are elected exclusively out of Snohomish County. And one, the one that we have, District 3, is out of the four northwest counties.
Okay. When you say you're elected, how often do they run for election?
It's a six-year term.
Okay. So if you...
The other thing that folks might not realize is that when cases go to the Court of Appeals, there is no trial. The trial record has already been produced, and the judges down there review whether... the participants in the case, if it's the prosecutor or the defense, or in civil cases, the plaintiff or the defendant, whether and or the judge is always an important part of this, of course, whether they have conducted the proceedings in the trial below correctly. And when a case is heard, three judges sit on a panel and they vote two out of three to decide what should happen in the case.
Okay, So do you actually have formal courtroom? You don't have formal courtroom hearings then?
You do. You don't have a formal courtroom hearing where testimony is taken, but after mm-hmm. the parties submit what we call appellate briefs, then a case is scheduled for oral argument, and the participants have to travel to the court in Seattle and present oral argument to the Court of Appeals, which usually lasts, it's a half hour in total for the parties to present their case to the appellate judges. And then the appellate judges after that usually 2 or 3 or 4 months later, they issue a written opinion which contains their analysis of who should win.
Okay. Because, like I said, I'm sure a lot of people don't even know what the appeals court is all about. So I think it's probably good to have this discussion on, you know, what actually takes place. So got about a minute left. So I want to summarize again why you think you're the right candidate for this.
Well, I've talked to folks about the three-legged stool. Folks seem to understand what a three-legged stool is. If it's missing a leg, then it falls over. And I am suggesting to the voters that the best set of credentials for this position include criminal experience, civil experience, and when I say that, I mean from both sides of the aisle or the fence. And third, the third leg of the stool would be experience with the appellate court. And I believe very strongly that I'm the candidate who should be selected here because I have all three of those legs. So the metaphor or whatever you want to call it there, the stool won't fall over. And most importantly, you know, I really believe I'm going to be able to hit the ground running. Every one of those cases that I've handled over the years, and there have been thousands, you learn something new about the law. My opponent has really no more than 10 years of legal experience, and it has been primarily as a public defender. So I'm reasonably sure that she has not actually been involved in the preparation of any appellate cases at all, other than maybe some minor ones, which were not in the Court of Appeals for the Supreme Court. So I'm just asking folks to look at those differences, and if they do, to make a rational decision about who they should support, and I'm asking them to vote for me.
Great, Tom. Well, hey, thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule and joining us today. And again, I want to remind all of our listeners, get those ballots if you've registered to vote. You can actually still go down to the courthouse and register to vote if you haven't, but get those ballots that you've got in the mail, pull them out, and get them voted. So it's really important for you to participate in the process. So thanks again for listening to Wealth Wake Up Live. Dick Donahue, Camille Hulkenberg with you here on KGMI this morning. Don't forget about our show tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock. We'll get back into the economic stuff. Have a good week. Thanks for being with us.
The opinions voiced in Wealth Wake Up with Dick Donahue are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult with your attorney, accountant, financial, or tax advisor prior to investing. Securities offered through Cetera Advisor Networks, member FINRA, SIPC. Investment advice offered through CWM, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Cetera Advisor Networks is under separate ownership from any other named entity. Guests of Wealth Wake Up with Dick Donahue are not affiliated with Cetera Advisor Networks, CWM, LLC, or Asset Advisors, LLC.
Voiced in Wealth Wake Up with Dick Donahue are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine what is appropriate for you, consult a qualified professional. All indices are unmanaged and may not be invested into directly. Investing involves risk, including possible loss of principal. No strategy assures success or protects from loss. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Securities offered through Cetera Advisor Networks, LLC, member FINRA, SIPC. Investment advisory services offered through CWM, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Cetera Advisor Networks is under separate ownership from any other named entity. Guests of Wealth Wake Up with Dick Donahue are not affiliated with Cetera Advisor Networks, CWM, LLC, or Asset Advisors, LLC.